puts me back in Manitoba many moons ago.
It is time now for Abandoned Manitoba, where we say hello once again to Gordon Goldsboro from the Manitoba Historical Society. Good morning, Gordon.
Good morning, Marjorie.
So what are we discussing this week?
We're visiting a pair of sites that have a very salty history, by which I mean that these places were where salt was manufactured.
There are salt mines in Manitoba?
Not today, but in the past, yeah. Underneath the western side of Manitoba are extensive salt deposits that were laid down millions of years ago when this area was covered in a shallow inland sea. The salt is brought to the surface when upward-moving groundwater passes through the salt and dissolves it. Saltwater springs occur quite frequently along the western shores of Lake Manitoba and Lake Winnipegosis and have been used by Indigenous people for thousands of years.
So, Gordon, how did Indigenous people make salt from these saltwater springs?
There were two common methods. One was to place saltwater in a shallow trough or tank and let the sun evaporate the water, leaving behind the mineral salt. The other was to put a pot of salt water over a fire and boil away the water. A Métis family who lived in the vicinity of Lake Winnipegosis were renowned for their salt making as early as 1818. A fellow named Joe Monkman, assisted by his sons John and Joseph, used the boiling process with salt water from the vicinity of Duck Bay and Red Deer Peninsula. Explorer Henry Yule Hind visited the Monkman Salt Works in 1858, and he observed that they had three metal pans. Each was 5 feet long, 2 feet wide, and a foot deep. Wood fires heated the brine, and over the course of the year, the Monkmans made about 70,000 pounds of salt. Unfortunately, by 1889, when geologist Joseph Terrell visited the site, the Monkman facility was in ruins.
But that was not the end of salt making in Manitoba.
No. People continued to make salt on their own, you know, for their personal use. But in 1937, a group of businessmen from Swan River and Winnipeg formed a company called the Northern Salt Syndicate. Oh, it sounds kind of ominous. But its purpose was to develop a commercial operation near the former Monkman Salt Works. And like the Monkmans, they planned to use a boiling process to extract salt from a salt spring that was situated near present-day Highway No. 10, a little north of Mafeking. The water's salt content was nearly that of seawater, so it was pretty strong, and it flowed year-round at a constant temperature of 5 degrees Celsius. So they constructed several buildings, they began evaporating water. Unfortunately, well, the business was soon found to be unprofitable, and it closed after having made, well, apparently very little salt. When I visited the site back in 2005, all that was left of the salt-making operation were the ruins of a small warehouse building and a wooden crib around one of the salt springs.
Gordon, why was the salt works unprofitable?
Well, I think there were at least two problems. One was it was a long distance from markets, so the associated costs of taking the finished salt to market was prohibitively high. A second problem was that the waters used by the salt works, in addition to containing a lot of salt, also contained iron. This caused the evaporated salt to take on a yellow color. 19th century buyers of Monkman salt, well, they hadn't been dissuaded by the color, mainly because they didn't have a choice. That it was that or nothing. But by the 1930s, when this salt work was operating, pristine white salt, made inexpensively at places like Windsor, Ontario, and shipped cheaply to Manitoba by rail, was readily available. You know, so when given the choice between, you know, expensive yellow salt and cheap white salt, consumers picked the white salt. Well, today, you know, colored artisanal salts are in much demand, you know, but a century ago, this wasn't the case. And so the makers of yellow salt soon closed. But there was a second commercial salt works in Manitoba that operated successfully for over 30 years.
And where is that one located?
Well, it was located in Neepawa. It went back as far as 1913 when a drilling crew that had been operating in the vicinity of Neepawa, hoping to find oil, well, they struck out. They struck salt water instead. But entrepreneurs saw an opportunity. And in 1924, the Neepawa Salt Company was incorporated. When it began operating on a large scale in 1932, brine was pumped from two deep wells on the north side of town and evaporated to make a coarse grade of salt that was used for such things as meat packing and what was also pressed into blocks to make salt licks. That's where, you know, cattle can lick away at salt to fulfill their salt requirement. The output of the Neepawa Salt Works was apparently about 35 tons of salt per day.
Wow, that is a lot of salt.
Well, indeed. And then the demand for salt continued to rise, especially with the onset of the Second World War. In 1940, a completely new salt works was built on the northeast side of Neepawa, about a half mile from the original site. It consisted of two large buildings with some 25,000 square feet of floor space, constructed at the cost of about $350,000. And that's quite a lot of money, even by today's standards, but that's worth over $5 million in today's money. It employed 30 to 40 men, becoming a major source of employment in Neepawa, and it was a truly unique facility.
In what way was it unique?
Well, most salt works pump water into the ground to dissolve rock salt, then pump the salty water back up to the surface. In Neepawa's case, nature did the work of dissolving the salt, and it was believed, therefore, to be the only salt works in North America that produced salt from naturally produced brine. Working 24 hours a day, four evaporation pans, each standing 48 feet high and 9 feet wide, produced 100 tons of salt each day, or 22,000 tons a year. And it was not just coarse salt as the original salt works had made. Now they made fine table salt too.
So where does abandonment come into the story?
In this case, it happened in 1970. The Neepawa Salt Works had been sold in 1951 to a company based in Montreal. Well, that had no real affinity to Neepawa, no allegiance. And so in 1969, the company opened a potash mine near Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, and found that in addition to producing abundant potash, the mine could also produce high-quality salt, too, at a fraction of the cost of the Neepawa Salt Works. So in January of 1970, the Neepawa Salt Works closed.
And that's the end of salt making in Manitoba?
Yes, that was the end of large-scale commercial salt making, but it was not the end of the salt works. The good folks of Neepawa saw an opportunity because some of the former salt works buildings were still in good condition. That year, 1970, Manitoba was celebrating its centenary, and there was money available for communities to build infrastructure to mark the occasion. A committee of Neepawa residents proposed to buy the former salt works and renovate it into a community hall and sports complex. In due course, some of the buildings were demolished, and some were sold and moved away. But a large portion of the facility still stands today, and it's made up of a salt warehouse and the evaporating plant. Therefore, not only is the story of Manitoba salt making preserved in Neepawa, but it's a great example of the creative reuse of abandoned buildings. You know, one might say the idea was really worth its salt.
Well, Gord, what will we be talking about here in 2 weeks?
Well, a few weeks ago, we considered the abandonment of towns all over Manitoba by banks. Well, there's another class of buildings that are increasingly being vacated due to a profound change that is taking place right now, and which I think is newsworthy. We'll discuss it in 2 weeks.
Thanks so much, Gordon. We'll talk to you in 2 weeks.
Bye-bye for now.
No matter where I go, every time the wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba. Many moons.